That's all I need to start this show, I'll tell you that much. From our dusty cellars, thinking that whether your background is in school teaching, baseball, or trade unionism, you'll be differently influenced on your opinion on striking children. It's the final countdown.
Good.
Right?
Uh-huh.
Right? So bad. I'm Manus Cronin. Joining us this week, as always, we think they had him in mind when describing a large amount as a buttload. Jack Toner.
Hey, Manus, that's a lot.
Because, well, it depends on what the thing is. I mean, are you wearing jeans? If you're wearing jeans, you have four pockets. You could probably fit more in your jeans than you can in your butt. But if you said to someone, a jeans load, they wouldn't know. But they'd just think you fired one off while keeping your trousers on. I don't know what they'd
think. If anything, like, a jeans load is, like, a more accurate measure. Like, if someone told me a jeans load, I'd know exactly how much they were talking.
Mm. Yeah. For sure.
What about if it was a female jeans load? Because then it's almost nothing.
Oh, yeah. Tricky.
The female load is almost nothing.
And imaginary.
Forget all that. It's time to move on to the next intro. His proud GAA family wanted to see him on the Sunday game, so he pimped himself out after mass. Gavin Carberry.
good.
That's a rework of an old joke that's actually from, we had on a, I don't know whether we ever used it, but it was on something that we recorded. But there you go. Like Paul Revere, when he gets the ride, only the British are coming. James Belfast.
Excellent. Excellent.
That might be the best one yet.
And joining us without an intro, because I didn't know he was coming, former host of the show, most guest, I think, at this stage.
Double whammy.
It's Ben Clifford.
I was debating whether to join now or at halftime to swing the game in our favor, but I figured now would be, you know, why not just come on at the beginning and win the game? You don't have to lose for half if you have a star player.
Really best teams don't need impact subs.
Yeah, they don't. Make sports movies about just like teams that dominate completely always.
Except for the Harlem Globetrotters,
even though
getting pole position.
There is one of those. Actually, it's remarkably one-sided, like their games. You won't get too many anti-Harlem Globetrotter documentaries. To be fair, it's hard to get someone to speak against them.
Yeah, true. Except for
they must all be squeaky clean, and that stuns me.
Squeaky clean.
That was one of them.
Like,
or how deep does the rabbit hole go, Jack?
Just like, it's great that none of the Harlem Globetrotters got Me Too'd, you know?
I agree with you.
Or done for doping. Can you imagine if you were a Harlem Globetrotter who was like, I just needed that edge. I thought the generals were going to get me.
They actually have an interesting history because there is a documentary about them and you should watch it. It's good. They started off as like a proper barnstorming team that would buzz about and like could lose if you could beat them, but nobody could. I only saw the documentary like 10 years ago and once, so maybe that's not true. I can't remember. I think they were pioneering for African Americans in basketball. That's my takeaway from it. I can't remember if that was true or not. But I thought it was. So there you go. That's all we need. On the agenda this week, we've been checking out a new sketch program on Netflix.
Just seeing what the kids are up to these days.
Just seeing what they're up to. Kids are in
checking
a sketch,
how many of those seeds that we threw out into the world have sprung up to become tall oaks.
Yeah, I don't think I'm firing out oak seeds, though.
What are you firing out, Manus?
Nettles.
Nettles.
Bitter, unwanted nettles. Right.
You should go...
But before we can do that...
I was about to say you should go see some kind of medical professional. They might give you a doc leave. Doc leave would be what you get. Yeah. Oh,
that's good. That's good.
It's good better in the writing room.
That's why they pay you the big bucks.
It doesn't... if I stuck the landing.
A lot of your stuff is better in the writing room. You're a writing room king. You're the comedy equivalent of like a gym monster. You're one of these guys who just beats everybody up in training, but they get into the cage and it's just... You're the Ken Shamrock of joke writing. So when you're about 50, Hoist Gracie's going to kick you in the balls.
Also, where does Ken Shamrock come on the Hulk Hogan as a politician thing? I know we're not doing that this week, but is he better or worse than Hulk Hogan?
He's probably better, but if you read Ken Shamrock's... He has two books, and one of them you really will quite like Ken Shamrock, having read it, and it's almost completely false. And the other one, the more recent one, is apparently very good indeed, but you come out of it not very much liking Ken Shamrock. But he does seem to be a... He does seem to be a more together individual now, and he seems to like own what he was before in a way that Hulk Hogan doesn't. Yeah, I think you want Shamrock over Hogan. I don't think he's racist. He seems to have more of a grasp on some things. He had a hard old life though, did our Ken, that's for sure.
But sure look.
And look, the Lion's Den's doing pretty well these days.
It isn't.
I mean, it might be financially, I don't know, but they don't have any top tier fighters anymore. But before we get into any of that, we can get introduced to the beers. Most of you have the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
This week we're rocking a brewing King Nelson single hop Nelson Southern IPA. A lot of
words. What's interesting about this, probably one of the many interesting things about this, it's a Craft Central beer special. So this is brewed for Craft Central, which is where we got our order this week, which we are now out of. So we
starting you on.
Yeah, myself and James are, Jack. You rocked up in the around halftime being like, all right, Ducks, where do you need me?
I'm Bill Murray.
Back in the stands, Toner, is what they said. We don't need you. This is ice hockey. And who are you?
This is 6.2%, 440 mils. Like, it's not what I would generally describe as a Monday beer, but I'm interested to try it.
What was the type? Was the type contained in all those words you said, Jack?
Yeah, it's a Nelson IPA. Like, that's why it's called a Nelson Sauvin IPA. S-A-U-V-I-N is that middle word?
That's a type of wine. I don't know if I'm pronouncing Sauvin.
Yeah, that sounds like wine.
You're drinking wine.
James, resident sommelier.
Nelson Sauvin is the type of hop, I think.
Well, wine is
made of course.
Wine is famously made with hops, as we know.
That's why when they make it, they have to hop on all the hops with their feet to crush the wine.
Yeah, hop on over to the vineyard. I don't understand what you don't get about this, Gavin.
it's pretty clear.
And this also, if you look at the little hoppy malty scale that Brew Brewing put on the back of their cans, this is full hoppy. They've maxed out the hoppy scale.
National Australian animal. It's about half full of hops. They're all drunk.
It's exactly like a koala. They're all drunk.
You get them out of that tree and they will hop right back up.
Yes, they will.
As far as first tastes go, this is good.
Mm.
I don't know, like, it's kind of, I'm struggling to find the kind of tasting notes for it, but it's smooth for a 6.2%. Where is that? Little bit citrusy, not even citrusy, kind of like a more tropical fruit even. Hides the booze really well. Really nice mouthfeel, doesn't stick around too long, but does for a bit. I'm first tastings, I'm into this.
Yeah, James? I agree.
Or Jack.
Because, I guess Brew are probably a brewery that wouldn't have the best reputation.
We've given them shit in the past, I think.
They wouldn't be particularly highly regarded on the pod, but this is a solid effort.
Yep.
They seem to have upped their game, or at least upped their, like, doing other things
this
game.
And for the listeners, I'm putting my two hands together. I think Carrick Brewing and Brew have joined forces for some sort of Power Rangers Ultron. So it's no longer Brew Original, no longer Brew OG, but they brought in some other people. I mean, obviously, in this can, they brought in Craft Central, but I think Panda Nero and Tutti Frutti and those animal Jungle series is done with, I think.
Yeah, they're Carrig, the ones I'm thinking
Carrig,
of. Yeah.
Not Carrig, Carrig Brewing. You know that one with the Kingfisher?
Yes.
They've joined forces.
Well, good. They needed to do something. They were buying average for a long time.
They were. Yeah, even that, like, their core range was just kind of like, this is up there. I'm liking this. Jack, what do you think?
I also like this. I'm digging it. It's actually just, I agree with the most important thing that you said, Gav, was where the fuck is that 6.2%?
Yeah.
It's hiding out in Flavortown. That's where it is. I'm a big fan of this so far.
With big boozy ones, I don't really have a preference whether they let you know that the booze is there or if they hide it well. I think both are, in my mind, I'm like, fair play. Let me know that booze is there. And also, like, oh, how did they do it? Magic! You know, I have equal respect for both. So I don't think that it hiding the booze is necessarily a good or a bad thing. I'm just very impressed when things are high percent.
Yeah. Basically, I love Hoochie Hooch.
I love Hooch, yeah. This whiskey. Whoa, they didn't hide us. Excellent.
It's your eight beers.
Your inner teenage bush drinker is tanking you, though, when it's like doesn't taste that boozy because you can get it down you, you know?
Yeah, yeah. God, drinking as a teenager for me was rough. Like, I couldn't drink a whole beer without getting sick. I just hated the taste of beer so much.
It's you got to work at it, don't you?
You just need a dad who just gives you a sup of beer when you're a kid every once in a while. Develop a taste young. Let that taste develop into some sort of condition. You know.
I was going to say, I had that. Now, I still didn't like immediately like beer. And I used to think it was probably a good thing. But then I also remember like the first time I got drunk. And it was like there was a thing already in there. It was like, oh yeah, this is brilliant. I'm going to do this forever. I wonder if that might not have been from all that healthy early exposure that I think they were told to do. I think like there must have been some wisdom about it.
Yeah, they had to.
Yeah, well, I think the real classic way to acquire the taste of beer is to just not for ages and just drink cider and then start a beer podcast with your friends. So you have to force yourself to like beer. I think a lot of people go through that.
More and more kids are doing that these days. Yeah, and it's really effective.
So just in like give in to the peer pressure is what you're saying. And I agree. I think more kids should just man up and get drunk. fucking just do it. There's way too much. There's way too much emphasis on like being nice to kids and like having them like have their own what's that agency and all that. Go along with the crowd.
Just go with the crowd. Give us that agency.
Evolutionarily speaking, if you didn't go along with the crowd, chances are they would just throw a stone at your head and leave you behind. What's this guy? He's not doing what we're all doing. Throw a stone at his head and leave him behind. And they would. Your parents would find out. They'd be like, oh, did they throw a stone at his head and leave him behind? Yeah. So it goes. And off they would go, you know.
Repeating third class it is.
And off they would go. Where were they going?
Fourth class. Left him in third.
Fourth class. Yeah.
A lot of going places ancestrally for humans. It's only relatively recently, believe it or not, that we've been forced to stay in our houses and not interact with each other. That's the new thing.
Yeah, it feels like it's always been the way, but it's actually only been about 8 months.
Doesn't it feel like it's both always been the way and yet no time has passed at the same time?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a weird time dilation thing.
It's a system update. Matrix system update. Like, we all know it's like just keep them indoors and then we're going to get them. They're going to be flying. Like when we come out of here, God's going to be like, I got your cool powers, bro. You're like, oh, thanks. I just needed you all to stay in the one place and kill off people who couldn't fly. They were the test subjects. And then we're going to be shooting lasers out of our brains.
Yeah, it's definitely become like the default now. Like I was watching something like a week ago and the characters went into like a crowded bar and my first like instinct for like a second was just like, oh, that's dangerous.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
It's wacky. It's I get the impression this is what, this isn't what prison is like. This is much nicer than prison. But there's that quote from The Wire, which I'm sure was taken from something people really say, which is that you only do 2 days, the day you come in and the day you leave. And it would kind of explain why, like, the days feel like weeks and the weeks feel like minutes or something.
It's yeah.
Time dilation, as you said. Speaking of watching things, oh Ben, have you any beer there, or you don't have the same beer?
I have had King Nelson, and I looked at my score on that old app. I thought maybe past Ben might have some tasting notes that would be useful. I wrote for this one, "Come at the King." So if that explains what you need to know about the beer, I'll give you the score later.
Yeah, I think that.
But
that
for this, "Come at the King." Up. So that's a.
Thing of remembering Wire quotes and just remembering the first half and that being enough.
But I'm drinking. I'm just drinking.
What was that Omar was always saying? Come at the King. He said something about coming at the King. You're supposed to do it. I don't know.
I'm going to do it. Yeah.
If you come at the King, you better be pissed.
Everything will go right. Yeah.
Yeah. Just do it. I'm fairly sure was what he meant. They usually you were supposed to do what happened.
Are you going to ask the King what you need if you don't come at him? You can't stay away from the King.
It's a logistics issue at that point. Yeah, you're right. It's about time we started talking about the practicality.
Pull away from him.
Nope, not going to work.
Yeah, he's not going to be able to hear you.
Bad. This is all a bit rudimentary, to be honest. I think our listeners already knows about coming to the King. And what's
Let's give them some credit.
Give them a little bit of credit, you know. What do you have? You're just drinking something?
Guinness with a widget.
Just whatever.
I feel like I'm having like a nice celebration state or an oyster state, but it's just a
Guinness is better.
That's all it is.
So what's the deal with that Guinness widget? They're taking it out when people are pissed off. For somebody who has a beer podcast, I really should have followed this better.
You get 150 points and you end the game.
Way overpowered. That's why they had to take it out of the game. The quaffle was fucking useless.
Yeah. Now, surely if you weren't with it, you would just like not catch it until you had enough points to where catching was that doesn't make a lot of sense to me. You know, surely the game should be timed.
But Guinness is all about that kind of false kind of narrative, the kind of like, sure, you have to let it wait, you know, don't turn the can upside down and spin your glass. Like, they have all that tradition, and the widget is one of those ones where it makes no sense. And anyone with a brain would go, I think that's marketing bullshit, but take it out of the game. You're looking at Guinness Foreign Extra. That's what it's just that one.
One of the reasons why people are probably going mad about the widget is that Guinness people are insufferable, and Guinness are very good at marketing to those people. And I know that because I was one of them for so long. Well, no, see, this can't with the widget, but I need it to be poured like this. That's what they say exactly, and it's what they say.
I got a press release like that the other day. Like, and if you're thinking it's M-W-H-E. Though there's that, sorry, before you get on to Netflix, there is the 00 news. I don't know if you heard, it was recalled because of a microbiological thing. The science was wrong.
It's poison.
And in a press release, the head of Diageo he ended up saying, well, that's the end of me.
Fine mouse, fine syringe, fine rat, fine. They just let one go. Yeah, it's got a bacterial problem with it, apparently. And so you know what? There you go. Guinness, take that or that or that. I don't know.
A lot of supply chain issues for Guinness this week. You hate to see it.
You do.
It couldn't happen to a nicer company.
I mean, I drink their product all the time. I don't know
I'm
why.
I'm literally going to finish this and go and crack a can of bewidgeted Guinness.
I mean,
I will probably moan about, like, when I get the one that doesn't have it, I'll be like, oh, a bit flat. But it is a flat drink. It's inherently already that. It's one of the things I like about it. I'm full of shit.
Yeah, well, true. Look, what are you going to do? Quit drinking? Speaking of which, this week I'm drinking Mountain Dew.
They
were out of crab juice.
I didn't realize your virginity grew back, Manus.
It came right back. Yeah, I have. I grew a fresh virginity.
Now, Manus, I'm interested to hear your opinion on Mountain Dew, because I have some strong views.
Now, I've only realized before as I was opening it, this is sugar-free Mountain Dew, and I've never had the other one. You know what? I have had the other one, because I think they gave us a lot of free Mountain Dew for Freshers Week once.
Yeah.
That's
the only time I've had it.
It strikes me that I drank nothing but that for a week, and then... Because it was easier to get than water. Mountain Dew's right there. Water's all the way.
I don't know if anyone keeps a Fine Ale wiki, but I would love a list of all the things they gave out for free in Freshers Week that we've said that we've had and drank in the past. Because obviously different Fresher Weeks, but if you compile it all together, all we survived on was like Tic Tacs, Mountain Dew, Rockstar pizza, and something like...
And the worst,
and the glass
bottles. The chili, the fiery chipotle.
Yes, I do remember that.
Oh, God.
Oh, I even smell those now. Them, and that was the same year that we had the little red balls.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
Mucho picante, mamo.
Millions of the little red balls, and they're just not supposed to be drank as like a liquid to de-thirstify you. They're supposed to be like a little energy boost.
I think that was also the year that the non-energy liquid
toilet broke.
Was
the year that the toilet became a hole in the wall.
That was the year that it was glass bottles of Ballygown was the...
Yeah.
They were so inconvenient.
This was all, and I don't want to throw Tim Ford entirely under the bus, but Tim Ford had a theory that the main thing that drove people wanting to... Okay, the thing meant to make me want to join your society being if you had a good bag, fine. But Tim's theory was that the main thing people judged when evaluating the bag was how heavy the bag was. So things like...
Theory.
What if we get the glass bottles? And of course, there happened to be someone who's just like, well, I know a fella who'd sell you 500 glass bottles for, you know, or whatever.
I have a beer-related tangent on that exact fella, because I don't know if you know this. I only copped it there last year. Bob Coggins of White Hag used to be a Freshers Week filler upper of bags stuff. One of the guys you'd go to and be like, do you have any stuff? Because he used to work for something like College Times or something like that. Not to put him on blast on the show in case he's listening. That's the guy who used to fill the bags with stuff. On a professional.
See, Ben, you and I both started college during the Celtic Tiger. It was the last days of it, but we both got a year or two of good free shit.
Yeah, I think I've
what was the good
house
free
in Drimna,
shit?
I think we got 1 year.
Yeah, you used to get a house in Drimna.
I think so.
Yeah, we didn't appreciate it at the time.
But yeah, there was some good stuff.
Could still only get 400 members.
You get there'd be an actual voucher for something. I got normally you'd get like 20% off at Urban Outfitters. My first year we got like a 20 euro voucher for Urban Outfitters.
Jesus.
Granted, nothing in there cost 20 quid. It was effectively
a thing.
We got like Netflix subscriptions. Now that wasn't as good as it seems because
DVD.
At that point Netflix
sent you the DVD.
Yeah.
But we got like a year's free Netflix. There was lots of, and you could open as many bank accounts as you wanted and you could just keep getting 200 euro.
My wife still gets emails from one of the banks being like, do you want to close your current account, your student current account? There's 2 euro in it. She's like, you're the amount you've spent sending me letters to close this 2 euro account, because again, I think students travel card or something like that, one of those things, open it, put some money in.
There was various benefits to joining various banks. And we're sitting there going like, well, no one could have seen this crash coming. They were giving money away to open an account.
One of my jobs in university was dressing up as Henry the Hippo for Ulster Bank and going through Front Square as a giant hippo. And handing out like,
I remember they said you only needed the head part. I remember that you didn't actually need.
Well, I mean that's what they say, but they're not professionals in drama and theater studies like myself. And when you accept a role, you you eat those watermelons that people throw at your head. You just right there.
It was the jaw unhinging that was so remarkable. It was really wonderful.
Whoever got it after that was a hack.
Apparently, a lot of hippos die that way. people throw melons at them, and their throat isn't nearly as big as their relative to their mouth as you might think it is. So they anything above the size of a bit of cantaloupe, and they will just die if you throw it at them.
Well,
there you go. That's a little bit of something that we didn't.
Is that a fib?
It's not a deliberate fib. It might not be true because I can't remember.
That's kind of what I thought. Yeah.
I don't remember where I heard it.
It's not a concrete fact.
No.
It's something that sounds right.
So I'm sorry to all of you concrete fact chasers who've been tuning into this. God, imagine if people were just like believing everything.
Oh,
stuff that doesn't make sense, the stuff that contradicts the other stuff.
Would there be more or less Nazis?
More. We know that for a fact.
Yeah.
People started deleting everything on Facebook and we got more Nazis.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, as a direct result of this show.
Yeah, same answer, I think.
Yeah, I think.
Yeah, I'm sad to say, but probably more. Yeah.
Probably more.
It does appear that it doesn't seem to matter what we do. The answer to that ends up being more. Every intervention that anyone seems to try, it's just like, yeah, I don't fucking know. This is like Fantasia or something. We keep chopping them up, and there's just fucking more.
The unconnected things, like we, you know, anytime we bring back a quiz for a week, like, oh, somehow that makes more Nazis.
Yeah, I don't know.
Come on, we're trying to do the right thing here, guys.
Oh, God, it was time for Gavin's games one time.
I've tried punching him. I've tried agreeing with them. I've tried voting for them. Wait a minute. It really is an insidious ideology. I don't even notice you're doing it. Brand new sketch show program on Netflix, Auntie Donna, who I forgot that I think we saw live before.
Did you? I don't think I did.
They've done Edinburgh, yeah.
The fact that they did Edinburgh and the fact that I didn't remember it doesn't mean...
They did Edinburgh at the right time for us as well.
Yeah, I seem to think...
I feel like we didn't go to their show, but they could have been on like a compilation show, like Late and Live or something.
See, that might be it. That would also explain if they were on Late and Live why it's a bit hazy.
This is triggering
a bell. Were they the guys who gave out "This belongs to Lionel Richie" stickers? Is that why I remember them? Because there was like people who just handed out like
That was one guy.
Lionel Richie.
The show was called "This Belongs to Lionel Richie." Yeah. There was a few of those. That was a little. That was quite an irritating little. Well, I guess it wasn't irritating, but it was around for a couple of years before they started finding the shit out of people for just putting stickers on stuff. Like your man Cunt in the gang who had the little penises.
Oh, Manus, you're
very handsome.
Audio.
Cunt in the gang.
Did it? Can you hear me now? Am I still going?
I can, yeah.
Did you say Cunt in the gang?
Cunt in the gang. Yeah.
With a K.
Yeah, his marketing was all, it was just handing out like little penis stickers. And of course, if you hand out little penis stickers, people are going to put them on everyone else's posters.
Yeah.
Thankfully, we already had penises on our posters. So we kept on you. Yeah. Our posters already covered in penises.
Yeah. You gave me a bigger penis.
I mean, posters, unless you were willing to spend a lot of money, posters were fucking useless. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think we figured out basically as advertising went.
Yeah, because very few people are looking at posters and then going, oh yeah, I'll go and see that.
Yeah.
And even if they are, your poster is going to be covered up in the next 10 minutes by the next person who comes along with posters.
Yeah.
They're only helpful, I think, if you're already a name and all your poster is literally doing is reminding. So, oh yeah, he's on.
Yeah. That
must remember today. Get those tickets.
A lot of big names don't do Edinburgh. So it's useful for pointing out that this particular big name is doing it.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of stuff that like people will let you spend your money on. And in fact, tell you that you have to spend your money on. If you let them tell you that, and the fucking media don't help. Remember that was it just to go? You have to spend 12 grand, or you can't go. Do you? I mean,
yeah.
I know a lot of agents and stuff say that, but that's not true. No, you don't. You can. You can always spend 12 grand, or you can be like Cunt and they... I wonder, did they successfully collect on any...
The best thing that happened to the Free Fringe was your man, was it John Holmes? I can't remember his name. John something, who was in the Free Fringe and won the...
Yes.
The best newcomer, and then he won the best, and then he won best show. Because it showed that, like, the Free Fringe is, you know, just as good as the regular Fringe. Like, I think that the Free Fringe is more in the spirit of the original Fringe than, like, the big four venues, like, picking their top acts, spending an absolute bomb to perform to three people. Whereas, like, the Free Fringe, you just go into a bar like you guys did and just, like, entertain whoever's around.
Now, what I will say about the Free Fringe is it certainly proved, and I don't think anyone who was paying attention didn't already know this, but people don't pay attention to these things always, is that, like, the best stuff is as good as anything in anything else. But if you're just randomly picking a show, the chance that you're going to get, like, not bad, although it will be bad, like, something that the guy just hasn't, it's not done, it's not ready, it's not a show.
It's a guy who's got a solid 15 minutes.
Yeah.
And decided that he can do an hour.
Yeah, he had to exactly.
Come up with a lot more new material.
And those are, like, they're tough. They're tough to sit through, those ones.
The paid venues do, like, make focus people's mind. Like, if we were doing a free show our first year, who knows how shite our show would have been, because it was terrible.
it wasn't great to begin with, but it was finished.
Yeah, it was, like, finished.
Undeniably a show.
And we did it as we intended to do it, and we repeated the performance 25 times or whatever it was that they made you do it. So, like, immediately it's better than 80% of the shows in the Fringe, and that's not saying we were any good. And we wanted to go free. It was Rob who was like, nah, you'll dog it if you do that. And he was right, we would have. And we know, because we then later did do the Free Fringe, and we did dog it. But admittedly, we knew that was going to happen. We were having a good old time.
And that was, again, that was only because, you know, we had when we were going over for a week, and we thought, well, yeah, we'll do a free week.
Yeah.
I don't think if we had the full month again.
Oh, no way.
On the Fringe for free again. We'd gone paid.
Well, not also because we had sort of figured out, for good or for bad, how to not lose money during it.
Mm. Yeah.
By year three, it was like, no, we cannot lose our whole lot. I'm not going to fucking make a huge success of it, but we won't lose our arse, because it turns out there is a trick to that that's nothing to do with how good your show is. You can just...
It's hustling your chops for cash.
Yeah, and not that much cash for what...
I wonder how much the hookers at the festival must make compared to the average comedian. How many zeros are there on the end of that number?
If you just work in Poundland for the duration of the Fringe, you make significantly more. We worked this out. When we were cashing our checks and feeling great about ourselves, because you do feel great about yourself, because they give it to you all at once at the end.
Yeah.
And you think you're rich because you feel rich. But then it was like, hang on, you know, if we'd have just gone to work for the month, we'd have made double this.
I think they worked this out because I used to work a summer job for 3 months to pay for 1 month of performing to get less than a month's wage. Yeah. I could have just saved all that money I earned.
Yeah.
So
there's not losing your arse. There's making money where, like, yes, technically you made more than you put in. And then there's, like, making a profit that would in any way make the time worth it. And that's a step that we never made. It was never worth it. If it wasn't fun, it wasn't worth doing.
So that's Auntie Donna. You should probably check it out.
I'd also say there's definitely a 5L countdown bingo for how many times we end up, like, back at the Edinburgh Fringe Festival.
It was the last time I truly felt alive or valuable as a human being. So that's probably... God.
I think
it was, like, optimism. That time of your life is the September and highlighting all your shit in your workbook time. You could be anything. If you died tomorrow, people would care. That thing, you know.
It's also like, I think during the second run of The Fringe, I had just left college and I think I like cornered a comedian who like I really liked at the time and wore the ear off him about how I was going to like, oh, maybe I'll just, I haven't got a job yet. Maybe I'll just be a comedian. And he was just like, yeah, do that now. Like I was a lawyer for 10 years and it's so hard to go from having loads of money to no money. Yeah, if you go from no money to no money, it's easy.
Yeah, I'm very glad then, we did like, it the way
I pussied out of the comedy career.
So Gav, have you been saving your cash or are you just planning
I've been hustling it for chaps.
That's your problem. You've been doing it.
You've gotten that fuckways.
You gotta hustle your chaps for cash, Gavin.
Oh, what?
I'm starting to see what went wrong here.
Yeah, you've just been buying ass.
This is like a way worse version of Midnight Cowboy, except you went to the big city, put on a cowboy hat, and paid for a load of sex.
You basically just went on a holiday to Vegas.
Yeah.
Auntie Donna.
We need to talk about John. Side note, Midnight Cowboy is not the film I expected it to be. I expected it to be a much more kind of straightforward film, but like it gets a bit psychedelic at times. And
they were making weird excellent. Films. Like, they were making weird films. Midnight Cowboy. They were making very odd films around that time. Like I think it was I think it might have been an X-rated film. I think it.
Yeah, it was. It's the only X-rated film to win Best Picture.
Ah, well, then there you go.
Yeah.
Now, it does. That's X-rated now. You think it's just going to be a porno. Frankly, it would be an 18s film now, but it wouldn't fucking blow anyone's mind, really.
Yeah, and also the American rating system is really weird. Like, I think an R-rated film you can watch if you're with your parents is like a 12A, but like a lot of the like 15 films would be 12A.
And then they've got an NC-17 rating. I don't know what that means. You would think it means you can watch it when you're 17, but no who the cooks. Fuck knows? What does no R mean? No cooks.
That's what it's... I looked it
no
up there.
Cooks.
No cooks. Yeah.
No cooks,
yeah.
Yeah,
it was
no cooks. Which is why they never let me in.
You absolute soy boy.
Auntie Donna.
How much of it have we seen? I've only seen the first two episodes.
I've seen episode one.
I've seen all six.
You've seen them all? Oh, there's only six.
Oh, wow.
The six.
So, as the person who has watched the most, James, do you want to start us off?
I really enjoyed it. I think it can be a bit hit and miss at times, but there's some very good sketches in there. It's kind of, you know, I have seen some of their stuff on YouTube in the past few years, and it's just them doing their thing. You kind of feel like they were just allowed to make the show they wanted, which is kind of nice.
I haven't seen any. What's the, like, do they have recurring characters throughout all six episodes, or what's their kind of format for the show?
Yeah, like, they're kind of playing themselves for most of it, and they'll have a sort of plot each episode. It's kind of, I mean, it's obviously pretty minor, but it like, kind of...
If you're trying to describe the format, like, it's what you would just be like, okay, it's a placeholder format, essentially.
There's not really much of a format.
They all live in a house.
It's Pappy's Fun Club when they did the show.
That was my
thought watching it was... if you're Pappy's, you're watching this because Pappy's did a BBC program called Battles, and it was dog shit.
It was awful.
Yeah, same thought occurred to me when watching this. It's like, this is what Pappy's could have been. Like,
but Pappy's was really good.
Oh, live. Incredible!
Pappy's
were fantastic live. Like, if you only saw Battles,
live, they were fucking insanely good. Live.
And if you only saw their television program. Like that really fucked them, I think. They'd have been better now. Maybe financially this just isn't true, and maybe they're off doing happy things now. But to my mind, credibility wise, by doing it, they'd have been better off not doing it rather than doing the thing they did. Because it made me, I knew what they were, and I was like, ugh, Pappy's. So imagine if you'd only seen Battles.
Yeah, like, because for us, it's like they're like one of the highlights of The Fringe year after year after year, consistently brilliant. TV show was so bad.
So there's no doubt in my mind that had they done this, or basically what Auntie Donna did, that it would have been excellent. It's just they came along 8, 9, 8, 7, more than 5 years too early for this. And there's
I'm sure there was so much interference behind the scenes on that show. Whereas, yeah, the Auntie Donna show, it does just feel like they're allowed to do what they wanted, because it's the same as their like YouTube sketches. It's the same as their live stuff. It's very much feels like it hasn't been like tampered with, or like they've had to cut corners or anything.
Because there was something of a, I feel like a golden age of sketch comedy, UK sketch comedy anyway, a few years ago, that they just, by virtue of never being able to find something that translated to a bigger medium, that they just kind of went away. I'm thinking about Whittank as well. You're talking
Whittank, Penny Dreadfuls.
Yeah.
Isn't there a man in the Penny Dreadfuls now in the US? The tall guy, Humphrey? He's in a lot of stuff. I saw him in Mythic Quest, the Rob McElhenney show there the other day. Oh, and he's in a few, like, An Office or Parks and Rec or Type. I've seen him crop up. He's over in the States.
He's in stuff. A bunch of them are. No, look, I mean, here's the thing. A bunch of them, if you were good at that, and like the guys we're name checking were very good.
Yeah.
And consistently good for years. But there just wasn't... there wasn't a thing for that format to jump to. It just seems that production...
it was the height of panel shows being watched.
Yeah. So any like middle of the road kind of stand-up comedian could go a million miles, whereas the sketch comic kind of really suffered. Now, that being said, when you say move to a bigger format, TV is the obvious choice. But the Penny Dreadfuls radio show, I think, ran for 3 seasons and was amazing. I think you can still get some of it on YouTube. But I found their radio stuff better than their stage stuff.
Yeah, I never actually really checked out the radio stuff, although I do remember you saying that, and I remember meaning to check it out and then never doing so. That's part of the problem with that as a format, but just we even know the difference between what you could reasonably do with what it cost to have something that looked good compared to what it costs now to have something that looks good. The production is way...
part of the appeal of Auntie Donna is that it looks good. So even when the sketches seem like they're going nowhere, like there's interesting shots and editing, that's keeping your attention.
I think because there's actually... that's partly because I think Auntie Donna as a group, it looks like there's just three of them, because there's three of them that perform. But I think there's like six of them really that write, and like the others produce and direct, and they're like composers and cinematographers and everything else. So they've got a lot of like full-time talent behind the camera as well.
That's such a smart way to operate as a sketch group.
And funny, it's like brave to make it as a decision at any time early, because that makes perfect sense when they are, it shows vision. Maybe they didn't have this, maybe I'm attributing them too much, but like to try and have like, okay, you'll just be the writer and you'll be this and you'll be that, and we'll have all of us, like you're bringing it to be like 9 people. Jesus, can you imagine it early on? You know, you're already doubling up in beds and stuff.
Yeah.
I think they had other members as well who performed. They had other performing members who left. So I think at one stage it could have been like 8 or 9 of them in total, and they had like 4 or 5 performers.
They're and we called them a bit hit and miss. I think that first episode has barely any misses in it.
Yeah, no, what I thought were misses was actually build up. Like the Wi-Fi poo-poo thing actually has a payoff that's worth the kind of like 2 or 3 minutes that where it just kind of like treads water.
And again, it is true that because the production is so good, it doesn't, you're not like even if you're just watching that live on a stage, or if you're watching a low quality production that during that build up time, you're just bored. You aren't bored with them. Now, by the second episode, there was misses, and stuff that I was like, oh, that just didn't go anywhere. They had no idea how to end that. But again, it keeps chugging along. Maybe what every thing that goes into tries to jump format. And I found this with I Think You Should Leave as well. That was what it was called. Yes. Wasn't it? That,
Oh, I Think You Should Leave was so good.
It was.
I think you didn't like it as much, Manus. It was more miss than hit for you.
The bits that were hit, I absolutely loved. And I think, like, in the whole run of it, there is, like, one or two great, like, shows.
Yeah.
And part of that's not necessary. That part of that, I think, is just what I'm used to. Like, even the best guys that I think are the best. So, I mean, I'm thinking of, like, your Pajama Men's. I'm not going to be a football commentator here. You're Wayne Rooney's.
His incredible sketch. Like the sketches he pulls off on the pitch. Yeah. I saw this one sketch where it's like the punchline is, I have the ball. And the joke is, I scored. So.
Yeah. And Joey Barton's punchlines, which is just, he punches you. To say like Pajama Men, Pappies, pick whoever you like. Even the ones who I love, you maybe see them twice a year. If you really go out of your way to see them a second time, you probably only see them once.
Yeah.
And they have a whole year to write a whole other hour in between that. So when you're trying to put a series together, you're inherently going to be more miss that just finds its way in there.
There was a question raised, and this is derailing a little bit, but we were watching some...
Oh, it's going to derail it? Then we can't possibly ask this question, Jack. Not on this program.
Not that I don't want to talk about niche British sketch Tories, but we were watching some... So Dave Chappelle is now on Netflix, The Chappelle Show. We were watching some Key and Peele. We were enjoying some Mitchell and Webb look, and we were realizing that, like, who is that now? All of those people at a time were the top of the TV sketch game, and I genuinely have no idea who that is in this moment. Does that person exist?
For me, it's Tim Robinson. Obviously, TV has changed in that, like.
Netflix, what even is TV anymore?
Maybe, what is TV?
Maybe that person is on TikTok and I don't know about them. Yeah.
Yeah. No. And probably the best sketch person at the moment who we don't know about is on TikTok.
Yeah, it's someone who will be Bo Burnham,
but you're not sitting down to watch half an hour of one person sketches. You'll watch their one good sketch and then watch someone else's.
Yeah, I think that too often, like, with and the problem with Pappies was that their format didn't work in TV. I think the problem with a lot of sketch is that it tries to fit itself into a sitcom format, whereas, the perfect medium exists. It's YouTube. It exists. Just do sketches on YouTube, you fucking idiots.
All right, guys. Deal. We're going to start writing sketches again. We're going to put them on YouTube. That requires incredibly limited commitment.
Jack, I'll follow up if you will.
That's a dangerous promise, Gav, because this is something I actually want. I would actually enjoy.
No, it's not. Jack, that's not even remotely dangerous. That's the safest promise he's ever made.
When's lockdown lifting? Does anyone remember?
That's like promising to lose control of your bladder as you age. It's just going to happen.
You could put a call out now for every listener to give 50 quid towards the sketch show, and they would be like, well, that's 50 quid I'm never spending, because it's just going to stay fresh in my pocket. It's not a...
yeah.
The tickets are going to be 10 grand. Don't worry, you'll never have to buy them.
It's a reverse prize bond. You never pay, and we all win.
I'd pay festival ticket prices to see Gav do comedy again. The rest of you can go suck a dick.
Hey, bitch, you see it right
every
now.
Week.
What
the hell?
I'm giving you that shit you need.
And you should be charging my ass. I'm making my own point. You're making it for me.
The sitcom thing is absolutely correct, because they almost never make it to where it would be a good enough sitcom on its own. They don't really want to do that. I don't doubt that, like, if you had to put those guys in a properly written sitcom, that they could make it work. but they don't go to Anti-Donna format is perfect. I could also see a bunch of times during Anti-Donna, I was like, it wouldn't take that much. Like I could reverse engineer that and it would work on stage. They weren't, although the production values were very high, there wasn't anything where you're like, oh, that just works because it's on. Thing.
Yeah.
It helps. You can do smash cuts. You can do more tight sound transitions, visual transitions. You can do the stuff like putting the text messages up on the screen, which is, you know, that visually interesting stuff. You know, like where they the guys talk.
The top bubble was the first thing that jumped into my head where it said, you probably, like, it would be tough to do that on stage, but you could. If you really wanted
if you haven't seen it,
arguably, if you pulled it off on stage, far more impressive though. And the thing you're walking away from the show being like, they managed to put flip art comedy in a sketch show with text message, you know, like a real kind of proper Japanese style in black costume, like bubble kind of stuff coming up, and you'd be like, that's impressive stage craft.
But I was watching the sketch with the Family Feud sketch, and I was like, this is, it struck me as really Penguins-y, actually. And I mean, that's a huge compliment to Betrayal of the Penguins as well, because I mean, that's, but I could see that just being on stage. You wouldn't need, it was better that they could like point to the board and have, but you don't need it. That would have worked just fine. It was fundamentally sound.
Better that, because like both of them, like two of them were playing two characters each.
Yeah,
which you could just do easily on TV, just splice it in the edit. But again, you could do that, and
it's only because they went from 9 to 3. So if only those 9 members still in there, they wouldn't have to need to cut to an empty frame where Johnny used to do the lines, and Johnny's not with us anymore.
But that's what I thought they did particularly well, was that they used the medium to enhance what they would have done already. I don't think they didn't rely on it too much. It's a fundamentally sound sketch show. Loads of lovely little cameos. I heard Kirsten Schaal as the dishwasher. Homelander shows up at one point.
He's in episode 1.
There's also Huey from The Boys shows up later on. Keep an eye out for him. He's a bit harder to spot, but he's there.
Also, Randy.
Yeah, Randy's there.
Yeah.
From Sammy J and Randy.
Oh, yeah, yes, he is.
I do love it.
Like, at first, I was like, have they just gone really Randy-ish with that puppet choice? Or is that...
Wow, this must be a different person. Also from the Feltface family. But
You could see how you would accidentally, if you were just like, design me a puppet, how it could turn out like Randy. I mean, he's not.
That's how Randy got made.
Purple's a puppet color.
I think you're giving a lot too much credit into the people who made Randy because all they did was like, let's just have me a fucking puppet. And then shit got way too successful and they had to keep that puppet.
Unlike a lot of things that we watch for this podcast, which I haven't seen The Boys, so I wasn't part of that discussion, but like Enchanted, like hard to say, I think people should give Anti-Donna a go. It's really, it's fun, it's interesting, it's diverting. It's a great thing if you already have a serious series that's like an hour long that you're watching. And you need something when you're not feeling that, when you want that 20-minute hit, when you're like having your breakfast or something, Anti-Donna.
And in fact, can I recommend that? Do treat it as a 20-minute hit. I think part of what I think made me not like the second episode as much was I just watched it straight after the first one. And I don't think it's best served by doing that.
Yeah, I think I did that at one point as well. I just watched 2 in a row and didn't like the second one. I can't remember which episodes they were. But yeah, and break them up. Just come back to them on their own. And it's sort of good in small doses, which sounds like a kind of criticism almost. But it's very good in a small dose.
I mean, they're episodes. Mm. They're designed. Yeah. They obviously write an episode, because part of it is you sort of get into their rhythm and you can sort of see where the joke's going beforehand, which while you can still appreciate it, you're not going to get that like that like that thing that we want, which is the laughter, the actual laugh out loud on your own laughter.
Isn't that thing about comedy?
Whereas if you space out
like
the
comedy, it, like someone distilled it down to surprise. Like unless you're shocked or surprised or taken aback or twisted by it, it's you're kind of like, oh yeah, got it. Like the whole thing about a knock knock joke is that like you have to keep changing the ending because you're like, oh, I got this bit. So like if you can see the beats, it's like you're just not going to find it as funny because you're like, that was clever and well executed, but I was not taken by surprise. Same reason you don't go to two magic shows.
Yeah, you don't want to be comfortable in comedy. You want to be, on edge, which I think is part of the appeal of like that cringe comedy thing is you are like a little bit shocked and
well, that's because it's a cringe of another festival. So you've got the Edinburgh Festival and the Edinburgh Cringe. It's a different thing. So that's why it's good, right? It's playing off something else.
Ben, you're on it today. You're on it.
You sure are. That is Irish Times letter page humor.
I'm gonna start a little column and maybe write some theatrical plays with this new character of mine.
What was that? It doesn't matter because I can't remember it. There was a cartoon that was very text heavy, and it was always like I'd read it and I'd be like, "That was enjoyable." I have no idea what it was about. Anyway, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Wait, but why?
I seem to recall it.
It's not a funny cartoon, but that's a big long read, but it uses cartoons. It's really good, actually.
That's probably it. And what I think one of the ones where like I'm waiting for a joke and enjoying it, but like the joke isn't there because it's not supposed to be that. But I think you're so conditioned to be like, cartoon. This is going to have a joke in it, and of course,
yeah.
In any case,
next week, could we discuss our favorite newspaper comics?
Yeah,
because I know what mine is.
Spoiler alert for all of us. I think it's Fred Bassett. I don't want to lean too much into Fred Bassett because I think there's a podcast that talk about him all the time, isn't there?
Of course there is.
It doesn't stop us.
But it's one thing when I don't know that another podcast is doing the thing. So what are you gonna do? Andy Donna, watch it. And watch as well, it's still on Netflix, isn't it? I think you should leave.
Oh, yeah. I think you should leave. It's still on Netflix. I think
more acquired taste, but your man's brilliant.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When it's good, it's like,
I can't think of much better than it when it's good.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's fair.
It's just, he's fantastic. There's just some stuff that I'd never have thought to do.
Yeah.
You look at it and you're just like, oh, that's, I mean, people often say, they're like, how did you even come up with that? But this,
for the most part, they're humoring the person. Whereas with this, it's like, Jesus, how did he come up with
that? How did he come up with that? You know? So watch that. Was there something else we were supposed to do? How's things with you, Ben?
It's been good. Working away.
Oh, yeah, shit, Ben's here.
Yeah, I'm back, keeping my schedule of kind of every 2 weeks. Is it kind of? Because sometimes I'm not.
It's been like
nobody's counting. Nobody's listening, frankly.
Speaking of things people don't listen or watch, just doing the D&D show on the off week.
Why don't we just, given that they're not listening, why don't we just do My Dad Wrote a Porno 2? Like, that was very successful. Why don't we just do that?
We already did. We already tried to fucking do Kissing the Coronavirus, and Manus was too concerned that it was
not to make this podcast within a podcast, but listening to that episode, 100% agree with you, Manus. The moment they knew,
of course it's not real. That's not the point.
Listen to what Ben said. listen to what Ben said. I think he's right.
But it is. It's like when you're writing a joke to write a joke to be funny, it's like those, like, you all know, you're seeing guys growing up as teenagers who are like, I do the thing that your man from Scrubs does and I stare into the sky, but I pretend I'm actually doing it. It's not just like JD. I'm often aware. It's like you're doing the thing from the show. You're doing the thing. You're in on the joke. It's not funny if you're in on the reason you think this is funny.
Yeah, it's only funny if the sap's got dignity.
That's why this show's hilarious.
It's fucking such a laugh riot.
What sweet dignity we have.
We're a bunch of sideshow Cecils. That's what we fucking are.
Yeah, got doing well. Keeping well. Looking for a house at the moment. If anyone has a house for sale, let me know. Doing the D&D show.
Should just go for a run.
Should do.
Should just go for a
run.
I've
been told.
Because that woman on the mortgage ad just goes for a run, finds a house.
I've been told to mail drop people interested in selling a house. And I'm getting to the stage where I think that's actually sound advice, where I just drop in a letter to people's houses and just go sell them. I'll buy. No real estate people need it. Your solicitor, my solicitor.
And you know what? I think actually you need to be more direct than that. I think instead of like thinking of selling, you should just be give me your house. And instead of writing in pen, you should write in blood.
You got to give yourself somewhere to go in a negotiation.
There's a lot of people who talk about elderly relatives alone in big houses, and no one's checking in on them on COVID. No one's checking in. So, and how long are squatters' rights? A week?
You're
2 weeks?
It's just a bold marketing strategy. That's a nice house. Can I have it for nothing? No? Okay.
Well, now
what about 500 euro?
Now
we're talking.
We have our limits. Market value?
You're on a TV show, Ben. What's going on with your TV show?
Oh, yeah. I do the Homebrew Quest, the Dungeons & Dragons show, basically the week I'm not on this, I do that. And we're getting to the point where I think we've been doing it in lockdown more than we were doing it in person, which... I don't know. Maybe not. It feels that way.
God, that seems mad.
Probably not. But it's only like a year or two young. And that's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Because are we doing this about now a fifth of the time in lockdown? And we're doing this, a long old time. It can't be far off, Ben, if the time hasn't happened.
It was April 2019, so a year and then a bit of, it's coming close. So April 2021, I guess, would be, because it was basically the same time. It's going well. We did some gaming convention stuff. It's difficult because the plan was to take it a bit live and go out and start meeting people and doing that. But hey, if you're into nerdy stuff.
Yeah, you were saying that from early on, weren't you? That was potentially where its big strength lay, was that
come drink with us, come watch D&D live. Whereas we do it on a Tuesday, people aren't really going to drink on a Tuesday unless they're doing it contractually with their friends like this.
I forgot we made Ben sign that contract.
frankly, his lawyer is trash.
I'm the same lawyer.
It's the same lawyer. Rob
same lawyer for buying my house. I think I'm contractually obliged to buy five houses.
Just it's, ask the person for their house.
It's F De Burka of De Burka and De Burka Company. Where does that name ring a bell?
Hope everyone listening out there is doing well. It's kind of a weird second lockdown, so if you are, don't reach out to us. We're not good people to talk to for your mental health. Use us as scapegoats.
No, we'll just tell you to go with your gut, whatever it is. And like, hey, sometimes that's the right idea, but sometimes it really isn't. Sometimes you need to talk to someone who isn't us. So that is good news for everyone. No one is going to go mad and make Jack a dull boy in this lot.
No, I'm exciting.
Do you think everything that says Jack in it refers to you?
Yeah, a jack of all trades is just someone who's like as good as me, but at other stuff.
Yeah. He did think that the beer Handsome Jack referred to him, despite his obvious hideousness.
Though it is correct. Captain Jack Sparrow is based on Jack, though.
Yeah, well, it's a combination of me and several Rolling Stones, but mostly me.
That's why in the movie.
Oh no, they were.
They're all covered in moss.
Were they Rolling Stones, or were they rocks?
They were rocks.
They're rocks. They're because your head's.
We threw at you to tell us to leave us alone, but you're one of those resilient kids, and you kept following us.
And that's why I repeat. That's why I was held back in third class. God, it all comes full circle.
Yes, it does.
Well, thankfully, I grew up handsome and got a beer named after me.
And what happened after that?
That was the end of the story.
The handsome have fallen.
Yeah. That was actually the peak, which, to be honest, not that high a peak.
Guys who look like you normally compensate by having better personalities, is all I'm saying.
Yeah.
You know,
Yeah.
They usually. Do you want to hear my score for friendly. King Nelson? All hail, come at the king.
I did. Oh, wait. Do we want to give our scores first so it's not
true? I'm a very influential beer person.
You mm-hmm. are yes. on tap, yeah. certainly. I'm going to give it an 8.5. I'm going to give it an 8.5. I really like it. I think that this is a well-made beer by a brewery who I didn't expect much from, and I'll look out for brew more often now. I think that this is delicious, hides the booze really well, really hoppy, kind of tropical fruits. This, I could see myself buying again, which is something I wouldn't have thought that I'd say about brew, given their kind of core range.
I'm fixing to agree with you, Gavinsky. I see that you were edging on a 9. I too was edging on a 9, but I'm also going with an 8.5. It is super flavorful, hides the hooch really well, goes down smooth. If I had two of these, I would have had them both in the time that we've been sitting here.
Thanks.
I'm a big old fan of this puppy. Great job for Brew. Great get for Craft Central. People should be buying shit from Craft Central. It's an unbelievable service.
It is.
Yeah.
James?
Yeah, I agree. I have been sitting here with an empty glass for most of the episode because it's just so drinkable. Goes down very quickly. And yeah, if you had a bunch of these, you could probably get in trouble.
Oh, hey. Oh. What are you doing carrying all those King Nelsons?
Probably would.
I guess, yeah. Oh, sorry, officer. Arrest for the king. Me.
It's very tasty, very well balanced. Nothing you can really complain about. Yeah, 8.5 seems about right. Can't go too far away from
that. Total score of something? Finally, I came to a score of 8.5. Well balanced is exactly how I would describe this beer if I had thought of it in time, James. Excellent word. Well balanced is perfect. Yeah.
What did you give it, Ben?
It's difficult because I did one on Untapped and I gave it a 4, which would be an 8, but it's because I don't like giving 4.25s. So I think just to not mess with the algorithm, yeah. Otherwise you're looking at an 8 point recurring situation. It is an 8.5. It is clearly. But
it's a consensus. A rare beer that's a consensus.
That's with quorum.
Yeah, it really is.
Look, if you're going to come at the king,
you better have quorum.
That's it. You better have quorum.
Quick review on Mountain Dew. It is fizzy. It is sweet. Water is nicer. Mountain Dew is a mountain don't.
Ooh.
For me. Anyone drinks it. It's dog shit.
Yeah, my old review of Mountain Dew was, imagine they put sugar in window cleaner. Like, that's how it tastes.
My review is just a question of why is it so thick?
I didn't notice it being particularly thick, but this is the sugar-free version. Sugar-free. I think sugar puts a lot of body.
It's like a window cleaner reduction.
Demi glass of window.
It's not a healthy color. It's a euro for a 500ml bottle, and it would be a rip off at half the price. I don't know why anyone drinks this. It's hugely popular. Not here. I don't see many people drinking it here.
Mountain water.
No.
Safe for gamers. Gamers are all about the Mountain Dew.
But why? Like, you can drink anything.
Culture is trash. Because gamer culture is trash. I say that as a proud player of games.
What's that horrible drink that the Insane Clown Posse fans all drink?
Oh,
Faygo. Is it something? Is it just, are people enjoying it ironically? Like, I mean,
no, I think it's got like a little bit of caffeine in it and it helps you fucking game, bro.
Manus, I think you need to speedrun some game after this and just let us know how you get on, because maybe there's something in it that we don't know, like twitchy fingers, like maybe you're hitting those buttons better. There has to be something.
Go speedrun Stardew Valley.
Speed
pick those turnips incredibly
seduce quickly. Those villagers. Get them all to marry you.
I'm going to play some solitaire after this, see how well I do. Maybe even a little bit of Minesweeper. We'll see if I can really start sweeping those mines. And with that, I suppose there is only one thing to cheers to. obviously, to sweep in those mines.
Sweep in those mines.
Yeah, we should have brought Broom to a mine fight.
Two, one. Those are minesweeper scores. Those moves. It's...
Minesweeper. Oh, a five. I was close there.
Plant those flags.
Another two.
Minesweeper commentary on the radio would be about as interesting as watching someone play Minesweeper.
He's gone for a corner of mine.
The Final Countdown was brought to you by James Belfast, Jack Toner, Gavin Carberry, and Manus Cronin. Find us on social media at FAL Countdown or contact us directly on finalcountdown@gmail.com.